All right, to both say good morning. Let's begin. A good chodesh to everyone. And today's daf, Baruch Hashem, is daf Tzadik Vav 96. We are picking up Upashatna on Tzadik Hamid, days 95b, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11 lines up from the bottom. So, Bosse, we are, first of all, a special welcome to Abi Friends who's joining us, Baruch Hashem, joining our shir. Wonderful to have him, Baruch Hashem. A recently exited Sal, and now Baruch Hashem is back in Baltimore with his family for a little bit. It's a big schuss to have you with us. Bosse, we dedicate our learning today in the schuss of a refuah shlema for Kobi Rosemore, for Chaim Yaakov David Ben Avigail. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, he together with Kol Chole Yisrael will experience an ongoing and enduring refuah. So, remember, we left off yesterday in the midst of an interesting machlokes regarding the idea of the following. Meaning, what we've established, we've established ultimately is that a ganov gets to keep some of the appreciation. The only machlokes is what? How much of the appreciation he gets to keep? Oh, thank you, Mashi. Thank you. He gets to keep, and how much does he get to keep? Does he get to keep all of the appreciation? Or does he get to keep some fraction of the appreciation in recognition of the fact that the appreciation is really due to his efforts? Which I will say is an incredible, I mentioned this yesterday, but I'll say it again. It's an incredible insight into the idea of Jewish hakaras hatov, Jewish gratitude. So everybody knows the concept of gratitude is not uniquely Jewish, but the yisod of Jewish hakaras hatov is that even when somebody wrongs you, if they end up doing something nice for you in the process, you also have to be makir tov. So can you imagine this? Somebody steals my animal. It's very nice. The animal appreciates. So what does the halacha say? You say thank you. Say thank you. Right? Your animal appreciated while it was in the possession of the ganav. How do I say thank you? I recognize his efforts in the appreciation of the animal. It's mind-blowing. The extent of hakaras hatov. If that's the hakaras hatov you have to have towards a ganav. Right? Imagine that hakaras hatov you have to have towards your wife. Right? Imagine that hakaras hatov you have to have. That didn't sound right. But imagine that. Right? Yeah, that didn't come out right. I'm saying, imagine that hakaras hatov you have to have to the people in your life who do good for you, a spouse, parents, friends. It's an incredible, mind-blowing insight into hakaras hatov. So, both say, the Gemara was asking yesterday, this was the kasha we ended off with, when we say that the ganav gets some portion of the appreciation. So, lemaisa again, does the owner of the animal have the ability to pay him off in funds? Or could the ganav actually demand some portion of the animal itself? So that was the kashu. Pashat nameha. The Gemara says, we answered it from the following. There are three people for whom we evaluate the appreciation, and we pay off that appreciation in money, meaning that the debt can be paid off in funds and need not be paid from the object itself. These are the three things. Bechar lepashat. So it's actually interesting. If you have a case of where sons inherited land, and let's say, remember, Bechar, the firstborn, gets Pishnayim, gets a double portion. So let's say before they divided up the land, so the Bechar went ahead and did home improvements. The regular son did home improvements. So ultimately, the Bechar has to pay back the regular son for the improvements that were made. Similarly, again, if a creditor seizes land from a purchaser, in other words, we'll say this is a case of where A lent money to B, B lent money, B sold property to C, and A is collecting his debt from property that B sold to C. In the interim, C went ahead and improved the property. When A seizes the property, A is obligated to reimburse C for the improvements that C made on the property. So we'll say in that case again, A pays money to C, not land to C. Ubachol yisof. We'll say similarly again, if a man died and he left behind debts, and the creditors are seizing land from the Yarshim, from the orphans, in order to satisfy that. And in the interim, the orphans went ahead and improved the land. So the halacha is, again, that the Baal Chov must pay back the Yisomim in cash for the improvements. So what do you see from here? You see from here that Lamaisa, again, when the even though the ganav is entitled to appreciation, but ultimately, again, the owner has the ability to pay off the ganav with funds. And even if the ganav says, no, I don't want funds, I want a portion of the animal, I want a portion of the wool, we don't listen to him and we simply pay off his appreciation entitlement with money. So the Gemara says, Amar le Ravina le Ravashi, mi amar Shmuel b'chov lokeach yoyev l'shevach. So Ravina said, Ravashi, did Shmuel really say that the balchov, that the creditor has to pay to the purchaser, has to give him the funds for the improvements? So we'll say, remember, this is not a case of Geneva now, this is a case of balchov. So this is our case that we said before. A lends money to B, B sells property to C. B can't repay the debt, so A collects the encumbered land from C. So what we just said before was that if C went ahead and improved the property, so Bepashos, that means that the property itself is worth more than the value of the debt, then what? When A, the creditor, seizes the land from C, he must pay C for the appreciation. So the Shmuel really say that. Farmer Shmuel, Balchov, Goves, HaShevach. But yet we learned that Shmuel said that the Balchov gets to keep the Shevach. So we'll say that when Balchov goes Shevach, that sounds like what? That when a creditor collects land, he collects the land as is. And if the land was improved, that improvement goes to the creditor. Amrle lo kasha, to which he said it's not a contradiction. Kan b'shevach ha-magi alak sefayim, kan b'shevach she'in magi alak sefayim. So this is an interesting verbiage. It depends. Now, they're talking about if the land appreciated through the growing of produce. If the produce is so high that it's a shoulder length, then eina chinami, the balchov is not entitled to that, and the balchov would be obligated to go ahead and reimburse the purchaser for that value. Why I will say? Because the assumption is that when produce, we're talking about like grain, has reached shoulder height, then what? It's really a separate, independent entity. Even though it's attached to the ground, at that point in time, it's matured sufficiently that it doesn't need the ground. Therefore, if the Balchov is seizing that property, he is obligated to go ahead and reimburse that amount to the purchaser. On the other hand, b'shavach she'in magi alak sefayim, which means produce that does not reach the shoulders, which is underdeveloped produce, the halacha says that's viewed as what? As part of the land itself. So because it's viewed as part of the land, when the balchov collects the land, what else does he take? He takes that shavach, that improvement as well, and need not reimburse the lokeach. Amalei, v'hamasim b'chayom mekagal megavi Shmuel, afidu shavach ha-magi alak sefayim. But the Gemara said, well, one second, these episodes happen every single day. And yet Shmuel Rabbi Yossi was considered to be one of the premier experts in monetary laws. We'll see in just a little bit. And so these episodes happen every single day. And even when the produce goes up to the shoulders, Shmuel still makes the purchaser, the Balchov, the creditor, reimburse the purchaser. Amalei Lokashia, Tap of Tzadik Vav, Ha Dimasik Bei Keshir Ara Ushvacha, Hadulo Masik Bei Ela Keshir Ara. So we'll say, see, here's the interesting part. Depends on the amount of the debt. Sometimes the full amount of the debt is only covered by the value of the land plus the shevach. So we'll say in that kind of case, where let's say the value of the debt, the value that the creditor is owed, is only covered by the value of the land and the shevach, then guess what? The creditor gets to keep the shevach. He gets to keep the improvements. But when the value of the debt is only equal to the amount of the land, not the shevach, then in that kind of case, what? In that kind of case, ultimately, again, the creditor is not entitled to keep the shevach. He has to reimburse the value of the shevach ultimately to the purchaser. So Amarle, Hani Chalamando Amar I Isle Zuze Lelokeach Lamatzim Salik Le Lebalchov Shapir. Supposed to listen to this. All of this makes sense. All of this makes sense. We'll say, here's an interesting shaila in general. So let's keep this same case. A lent money to B. B sold property to C. Now you understand, of course, that the property that B sold to C was what? Was encumbered property, right? That was mushubat. It had a lien against it for the loan that A made to B. So now watch this. B can't repay the debt. So what's the halacha? A goes after C to take the land in order to satisfy the debt. Here's an interesting shaila. Let's say A shows up at C's home and says, listen, you know what? I lent B $1,000. There's a $1,000 piece of land staying in your possession that you bought after I lent the money. I'm coming to seize the land in satisfaction of the debt. Does C have the right to say to A, here's a check for $1,000. I want to keep my land. Here's a check for $1,000. Does C have the right to say that? Or does A have the right to say, I don't want your money. I have a lien against the land. I'm here to collect the property. So both sides. So this is what the Gemara says. Hani chlamando amar I islay zuzi lelokeach. In a case where the lokeach, the purchaser of the land, has money, lo matzi misalik le balchov. So both sides. All of this makes sense. This entire discussion makes sense. If you go with the approach that even if the purchaser, in our case, that's C, has funds to go ahead and give to A, the creditor, he can't do so because A's claim is against the actual land itself. And therefore, I will say, even in a case where there's appreciation, under certain circumstances, A will still be permitted to seize the property. But I will say, if you subscribe to the opinion that says that when the purchaser, C in this case, has money, he could choose to give $1,000 to A, and A has to accept that. So the Gemara says, Mikuli ara, hashta hab li giruye da ara shiur shvachei amrale. So we'll say, so in this case over here, where C improved the land, he should be able to say to A like this, I could technically go ahead and buy you out of this claim. Give you the money that being, I will say, obviously, you know, in a case where C pays A the $1,000, what's C's next stop? B, right? I want to be clear, meaning C's not doing this out of the goodness of his heart. He just doesn't want to lose his land. He's going to go back to B to recapture the $1,000. So we'll say if you hold that that C could actually do that, then C should be able to say to A, look, I don't have the money on me, so take the land, but at least leave me with a slice of land that corresponds to the shavach, to the improvements that I made. To which the Gemara says, "Ma'askina, what's the case here? Kegon the shavye nihile apotiki." Oh, Bosa, the case that we're dealing with over here is where when A lent the money to B, B established the parcel of land in question as an apotiki. Bosa, what does apotiki mean? Remember, apotiki is a contraction. Apotehe koi. Bosa, there are two different types of encumbrances. So one type of encumbrance is whenever you borrow money, at least from a halachic perspective, any property you own at the time of the debt is encumbered. Now, that's a problem. Why is that a problem? Because if I want to engage in other transactions, it's going to be hard for me to sell property if there's an encumbrance on the land. So what did people sometimes do? They created what's called an apotiki. An apotiki said, in the event that I can't pay the debt, they specified a parcel of land that will be set aside for repayment. So what does that do? What does that do? That lifts the encumbrance from all the other parcels of land and consolidates the encumbrance on one piece of real estate. The Gemara suggests that's the case over here. The case over here is when A lent money to B, B designated a parcel of land called an apotiki, right? You can say a parcel of land, called, and he sold the apotiki. Now both say, can you sell apotiki land? Yeah, absolutely you can. The difference is that the purchaser, I mean, presumably, I guess you'd have to sell it at a discount. The purchaser is taking a risk because not only is there an encumbrance, but this is the sole piece of land encumbered by the debt. Well, in that case, I will say, where there is an apotiki, listen to this. This is amazing. Even if you hold that under normal circumstances, a purchaser of encumbered land has the right to say to the creditor, I'm choosing not to give you the land, I'm giving you the cash. Even if you hold that that is true, that does not apply in a case of apotiki. In a case of apotiki, everyone will agree that creditor has the right to claim the land itself, even if the purchaser, in this case, C, is willing to offer him cash instead. Amazing. Amar Rava. Mosei Veiter. Rava Gaza. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shakom Yeh B'dvaro. Amar Rava. Rava said, thank you. Gazal v'hishbiach u'machar. Supposed to listen to this. Ganav stole the piece, stole the item, and we're talking about now, let's say, a sheep. Stole the sheep, hishbiach, and it appreciated. U'machar. And Abba said, then what happened? He sold it. So thief stole the object, appreciated it, and that doesn't make sense, but meaning he caused it to appreciate, or it appreciated on its own, and then he sold it after it appreciated. The gazal umachar. Gazal v'shbiach umachar. The gazal v'shbiach v'horish. Or I will say, or somebody stole an object, it appreciated, then he died, and his heirs inherited this item. Mashishbiach machar, mashishbiach horish. So we'll say, in this case, the purchaser gets to keep the appreciation, and the heirs get to keep the appreciation as well. So asks the Gemara. So we'll see what the logic behind that is in just a little bit. Boy, Rav asks a kasha. Hishbiach lokeach mahu. We'll say, let's say in the following case, what happens if Lamaisa again, what happens if Lamaisa again, the thief stole it, sold it, and the appreciation took place under the domain, under the ownership of the purchaser. So now what happens? The original owner comes back. They have to return the object. Does the purchaser get to keep the appreciation or not? Baser de baya hader pashta. After they ask the question, they then answer it. So we'll say in general, when you purchase something from someone, you not only purchase the item, but you purchase all the same rights that the seller had. So we'll say, watch this. In the case of a ganov, if a ganov steals something and it appreciates, so we'll say, what's the halacha? The halacha is the ganov gets to keep the appreciation. Now, how much appreciation he gets to keep is a machlokas, but we're not leaving that aside. He gets to keep appreciation. Therefore, when Ganav sells an object, he sells the same rights he had. So just as he had a rights, he had entitlements to keep appreciation, so to what? So to the purchaser or the heirs get to keep the appreciation as well. Incredible. Let's listen to this case. Let's say a Gentile steals an object from a Jew, and the Gentile, and it appreciates under the owner while the Gentile has it in his possession. So what's the halacha, Bosai? So Mahu, what's the halacha? So does the Gentile get to keep the appreciation? I don't understand. We made a takana for a Jewish thief. You're going to think now we're going to make a takana for a Gentile thief? And others are both like, why would we legislate for the benefit of a Gentile thief? We're going to legislate, okay, a little bit for the benefit of the Jewish thief. A, because he recognizes his efforts. And B, what? B, because we feel that this is also a potential investment in what? In his tshuva, in his soul. But why would we think that we would apply this same takana to a Gentile? Listen to this case. Kigon tizadni liYisrael. Listen to this. What's the case? The Gentile stole it, and then he sold it to a Jew. Sof, haba machmas ovid kochavim. Based on what we just said, it's not a kasha. When you buy something from someone, this is generally true. When you buy something from someone, the rights you have in that object stem from where? Stem from where? The rights of the seller. So therefore, again, even if the Gentile is selling it to a Jew, the Jew should have no greater rights than the Gentile. The assumption is the Gentile doesn't get the right to share in the appreciation. Therefore, the Jewish seller shouldn't get it either. So this is a note. Listen to this case. Lo tzricha. Get ready for this. Kigon de gazal Yisrael. A Jew stole it. And he sold it to a Gentile. It appreciated while under the ownership of the Gentile. And then what happens, Rabosai? Then the Gentile sold it to a Jew. So my, what's the halacha? So, do we say that since the object originated with the Jew, in other words, the first thief was a Jew, and it ends up with a Jew, meaning the last seller is a Jew, therefore the rabbinic enactment that a thief gets to keep appreciation applies? Or since there is a Gentile there in the middle, the Gentile is the first purchaser, then maybe the rabbinic enactment does not apply, and therefore the Gemara says, Teku. Amara Papa. So we'll say, now we're going to discuss something very interesting, which is, remember, one thing we've established is Shinui Kona, or at least according to some. Shinui Kona. When an object undergoes a change, so by definition, the Ganav acquires the object. What we are now going to discuss is how much of a Shinui is necessary. How much of a Shinui, how much of a change of it? What mean, or I say differently, what constitutes a change? So Amara Papa, Hai Manda Gazal Dikla Mechavrei Vekatle. So let's listen to this. If I steal a palm tree from my friend, I cut it down. Listen to this case. I have a neighbor, and what I do is, he has a palm tree that's right by the border of our property. So what do? I go chop it down, and when it falls into my property. So we'll say, even though it fell into my property, I have not acquired the object. Now we'll say, now what does it mean when we say I haven't acquired the palm tree? Look at Rashi. Lo kani lishalume dami ele yohiv le dikla gufei deleka shinu hashem. We'll say, now in this kind of case, what that means is that when I want to make restitution for the theft, I can't go ahead and give him back money. Instead, what do I have to do? I have to give him back the palm tree itself. My time, why? Because we'll say, in essence, there's been no shinoi. There's been really no change. Meikara dikli mikri. From the beginning, this is called the palm tree. v'hashanami dikli mikri, and still called the palm tree. In other words, the fact that it fell into my property doesn't change the name of the object. Therefore, I'm obligated to return the object itself. Dikla v'avid gubi. Let's say I took a palm tree, I stole someone's palm tree, and I made it into logs. Palm logs. So what's the halacha? Again, lo kani. The thief has not acquired the object, and the thief would be obligated not to pay back the value, but to pay back the object itself. Why? Hashta mihas gubi de dikla mikri. Because Rabbi say they're still called what? Palm tree logs. So the fact that it's called palm tree logs and not just tama palm tree does not go ahead and change its state. I'm sorry? No, so that's the point the Gemara is making. This is not a shinui. This is not a substantive enough shinui. However, gubi va'avdinu kishuri, but I will say if you take logs and you make them into beams, kani, the gan of iskon. I will say why? Because that already is enough of a qualitative change in the object. You could see that, by the way. Just again, a log is something fundamentally different than a beam. Kishuri ravravi va'avdinu kishuri zutri, but if you take large beams and make them into small beams, lo kani. I will say that's not enough of a substantive change. So lo kani, avdinu kitsutsaisa kani, if you make the beams into boards, that's also enough of a quantitative change, of a qualitative change, excuse me, to affect ownership on behalf of the ganav. Amar Rava, listen to this. Haiman de gazol lulivta va'avdinu hutzi. Just you want to see how amazing this is, right? We're talking about lulavim now, right? Again, amazing. So, right, we had tshuva on Erev Shabbos. Now you know we're in the David Hashem, which we're supposed to begin to say today, right? So you make reference to the Yom Tov of Sukkis. So here you have Mamash Asogya of Lulav. Speechless. I'm not really speechless because we're going to go on. So Haiman the Gazel Lifta. So we'll say, so what happens? I stole a Lulav. Va'avdino Hutzi. And I take the Lulav and I make it into leaves. So we'll say what that means is I tear apart the Lulav. Right? I pull the leaves off the Lulav itself. What's that? Locha Kani. We'll say that's enough of a change that I've acquired the Lulav. Because in the beginning it was called the lulav, now it's only called leaves. Hutzi va'avdinu chufya. And we'll say, if I took the leaves and I made them into a chufya, what's a chufya? Rashi says, shebo mechabdim, a broom. So we'll say, the way they used to make brooms, if you think about this, by the way, is if you tear off lulav leaves and you just bind them at the top, voila, you have a broom. So let's say I took the leaves and I made it into a broom. So kani, it's also called an effective shinui. Meikaro hutsi v'hashta chufya. In the beginning it was leaves, now it's a broom. Chufya v'avde sharshura. If I took the broom and I made it into a rope, how do you take a broom and make it into a rope? You just simply tie off, right? You twist it into a rope. So lo kani. So we'll say that's not called a good shinui. Why? My taima dehader sasrele v'havi chufya. Because we'll say you could easily untie it and it once again becomes a broom. By that pop, I'll say listen to this. Hilchos lulav and astrak, or hilchos lulav. Nischalka tiyom esmahu. I'll say listen to this. Let's say you take this lulav, and you go out and you split the tiyomas. The tiyomas is the middle leaf. So let's say you split the middle leaf. Rabosai, have you acquired that lulav? Remember, they're talking about now, have you acquired the lulav? Is that enough of a shinui if you split the middle leaf? So mau, tashma damer emasun, amrabi shoben levi, nitla tiyomas pasul. Rabosai, for dalin meaning purposes, if you cut out of the middle leaf, the lulav is pasul. The lulav is pasul. My love, who adin lenechlaka? Is that not the same halacha, Rabbi Yosef, for if you split the middle leaf? Lo nitla shayni daha chasrele. No, not necessarily, because Rabbi Yosef, if you remove the middle leaf, then what? The lulav is chasr, the lulav is deficient, that's why it'll be possible. Ika da amri, others say, tashma dabra masam rabbi yoshub and levi, nechlaka tiyomis nasakim ishanat lo pasal. Then Rabbi Yosef, what? If the tiyomis is split, so what happens? That is as if it has been removed and it's puzzled. So Rabbi said, therefore, for our purposes, if I were to steal a lulav and split the middle leaf, that would effectively create a shinui, because a split middle leaf is as if it's missing, and therefore aloha said that would be a shinui and the kind of a bikonish. It's not a kosher lulav, correct? Correct. Also, just parenthetically, by the way, just I always, it takes a couple of years off my life every couple of days. Before, you know, we check the little oven and people come in and they pick it up and they start shaking it around like mamish, like nobody's business. Please don't do that. Because somebody, namely me, spends a lot of time checking the lulavim. And when you go ahead and you start shaking it around like somehow, like minan gavaseinu biyadeinu, right? That the kasher lulav is one that makes the most amount of noise. You run the risk of splitting the tiyomes, of splitting the middle leaf. And if that middle leaf is split, then by definition, the lulav is possible. The reason why lulav is possible is because a split middle leaf is the equivalent as if the middle leaf is not there. If the middle leaf is not there, then the lulav is chaser. So if you want a gentle shake, that's absolutely fine. In fact, strongly encouraged, but please handle with care. So we'll say, therefore, again, for our purposes here, if you split the middle leaf, then lemaisa, again, lemaisa, that is an effective shinui, and the ganav would be kona as a result. So the Gemara goes weiter. Tashma damra masa amir Yoshua Levi. Fine. So Amar Papa, Haiman de gazel afra mechaber. Well, listen to this. If I stole dirt from my friend, va'avde levinta lokani, and I make the dirt into a brick, so I have not acquired it. In other words, suppose I, oh, right, this is a concrete thing, all right? So I go and I steal the dirt and I make it into a brick. So I'll say that is not an effective shinui. Why? My time, the hader mashvili afra. But I'll say it's interesting. Why? Because I could turn it back into dirt. In other words, we'll say it's good to what we learned before, that even if you hold shinui kone, it has to be a shinui de lo hader. It has to be an irreversible change. But if the change is reversible, then by definition, that will not acquire the object on your behalf. Levinta va'av de afra. But I'll say, if you take a brick, listen to this, if I steal a brick and I make it into dirt, kani. Then I'll say, ultimately, again, that's an effective shinui. My amrit dilma hadra va'abade levinta. Maybe you'll say, why is that? So I can always make it back into a brick. Hai levinta achrisihu upanin chadoshos ba'olakan. And I'll say, that second brick that you make is a brand new brick. And I'll say, now understand, they're talking about a situation, how are you making bricks? How are you making bricks? By hand. Which means that by definition, essentially, no two bricks are ever fully the same. Therefore, again, if I go ahead and I steal a brick and I make it into dirt, the fact that I can make it back into a brick is not called the shinu hachozer, because that second brick, and the lashon over here is quite beautiful, panim chadashos ba'alakan, right? It's a brand new brick that has now come on the scene. Bamra papa, papa said, hi man, the gozal naska mechavrei ba'abdi zuzei, bose, if I stole silver, right, so Nazca is just like a block of silver. I stole the block of silver from my friend, and I made coins from it. So lo kami. Ultimately, that's not a shinui. Why? My time, hadir avilu Nazca, because it was like I can melt down those coins and make them back into a block of silver. On the other hand, zuzi va'abdinu Nazca. But I will say, if I took coins and I made them into silver, I melted them down, kani, then in fact, that is a proper shinui. My amrit, hadra abili zuzi. I maybe will say, but 1 second, I can make them back into coins. Same thing. I will say, remember, they're talking about coins that are made by hand. Right? Or I should say, coins that are not made where every single coin looks the same. If that's the case, panim chadashos ba'olakan. Shichmi va'abdinu charati. I will say, listen to this case. Let's say I stole tarnished coins. Shichimi means, Rashi says, shchurin ke'en yesharim, tarnished coins. I stole tarnished coins, and what happens? Va'abdinu charati. I shined them up. So what's the halacha? Lo kani. So we'll say, in that case, again, I have not acquired the new coins. Right? Charit wa'abo. Because the ma'isa, again, that's not effective enough of a shinui. In fact, it's a shinui hachozer. It will revert back. Charati va'abdinu shechimi. But I will say, if I took new coins and I went ahead and I tarnished them, then kani, that is an effective change. My, so the Gemara says, my amrit hadr avidlu charati. You'll say to yourself, but why is that? So I could always reshine it again and make it like new. So the Gemara says, Meida yadi shechemayhu. But say, once coins have been tarnished, apparently they can never fully regain their original untarnished luster. Well, say, an incredible, incredible musr. That is not true in the Olam HaTshuva. So here's the amazing part. In the rest of the world, this is the way the world works. If something's been tarnished, even if you try to remove the tarnish, it can never look like new. I said there's one exception to that in this world, and that's man. We have the ability to remove the tarnish in such a way that we can become beautiful, sparkling, new, like you would have never known we've ever been tarnished. The natural world doesn't work that way. Man absolutely can. That's the koach of tshuva. Zaklal. Kol ha-gazlon ha-mashlim ke'is ha-gzik. Sha'as ha-gzila. So I'll say, so this is the principle of the Mishnah. Anything that is stolen, you repay back in accordance with the value it was at the time it was stolen. So Zakla Lasuya Marab. We'll say, what does this come to include? So the Gemara says, Lasuya had Amar Reb Eloi, not Ganav Tala Vina'asai. We'll say, this comes to include the following case. That if a person stole a lamb and it became a ram, or eagle Vina'asashar, or I stole a calf and it became an ox. So the Gemara says, Na'asashinu Biyada Ukno. The shinui has occurred while in the possession of the ganav, and therefore the ganav acquires it. Therefore, tavachu machar shalohu tavayach shalohu mocher. Therefore, Abosai, in a case where the thief would subsequently go ahead and slaughter or steal the item, so Abosai, there is no arba v'chamisha in that case. Why is there no arba v'chamisha in that case? Because the thief has already effectively acquired the item himself. Therefore, again, if he subsequently steals it or subsequently slaughters it, he's stealing or slaughtering his own item. Who gathered the gazal panda de turi mechavir? Suppose to listen to this case. There was a man who stole two oxen from his friend. Azal karabu karva. So zara buhu zara. Suppose to say, what did he do when he stole the oxen? He used his own oxen to plow his field. And ultimately, again, to plant a field afterwards. L'sof ahajuna l'mare. So we'll say what happened. After he finished plowing and seeding his field, what did he do with the oxen? He gave it back. So, you know, I thought that there's an element of chesed, of lending each other stuff. I didn't realize I had to ask first. So, right, so he went ahead and he returns the stolen oxen after he finishes. So obviously the victim comes before Rav Nachman. Amar lehu zilu shumu shivcha de ashbich. So Rav Nachman said, "Nu, let's go ahead and assess the shevach." Meaning, again, the ganav has to repay the shevach. So the ganav, what's the shevach, Abosai? The ganav now has an appreciated field. So fine, the ganav gave back the oxen. That's very nice. But he also has to repay the shevach, the appreciation. I will say in this case, the appreciation wasn't in the animal. The appreciation was in the ganav's land. He has to pay back the value of the appreciation to the victim as well. So we'll say, listen to this exchange. This is amazing. Amrili Rava. So Rava said, I don't understand. So we'll say, this is a psak. Rav Nachman was the dayan. So this is a psak halacha Rav Nachman gave. Rava's sitting there in the galley. Right? He's sitting there in the basin. And he says, Rabbi, I don't understand. Turi ashbach ara lo ashbach. So is it only, meaning how can you make the ganav responsible to pay back all of the appreciation? You make it sound like all the appreciation was due to the oxen. Doesn't the land itself have a chilik in the appreciation as well? In other words, the appreciation in totality is not due to the oxen. The land itself has a chilik in the appreciation. So why are you making the ganav go ahead and pay back the whole thing? Well, so listen to this. Amar, mika imna nishaimu kulei. I don't mean that the ganav has to pay back the full appreciation. He should just pay back part of the appreciation that was due to the efforts of the oxen. Amarle sof sof gazeluhu the kahadra beinei barebi. Rabbi says to Nachum, Rabbi, but I don't understand. You're going against the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah says that when you return a stolen object, Rabbi says, how do you return a stolen object? You are able to return a stolen object as is. So the ganav stole oxen, and what is he doing? He's returning oxen. Why should he have to pay any of the shevach? This nan, kala gazlonen mishamen kishasa gzeilo. All thieves pay in accordance with the Rabbi, the value of the animals at the time it was stolen. Let's assume in this case that as a result of the fact that he stole it and quickly returned it, there was no real change in the value of the oxen. So I don't understand, why isn't it enough that he just returns the oxen? Why does the ganav also have to give him the appreciation? Paul said, listen to this. It's an incredible mussar. Amarle, Rav Nachman says, Rava, lo amina locha, have I not told you before, ki asivna bedina lo seima le midi. When I am adjudicating a case, don't get involved. Don't open your mouth. Don't say anything to me. Da'amar huna chavrin, because Rav Huna, our friend, who's a senior up to both of us, said to me, da'amar huna chavrin aloi, ana v'shavar malka, me and Shavar Malka. I will say Shavar Malka, King Shapur, was one of the Persian kings. Interestingly enough, in this context, it refers to Shmuel. Shmuel's word, when it came to monetary law, was so decisive that they used to kill. They used to call him the King Shapur of Dinei Mamonas. That's a compliment. So you want to give somebody a real compliment. You say, you know, you're like the King Shapur of this. Right? So Shmuel was the King Shapur, ultimately, again, of Dinei Mamonas. Say, Rav Huna said that I and Shmuel, I and Shavar Ma'aka, are Achi Bedina. Hi, so, we'll say, so in other words, Rav Nachman said to Rava, why are you getting involved? Why are you getting involved? Rav Huna said that I, Rav Nachman, and Shmuel are the final words on monetary law. Hi inish gazalna atikahu. This guy, he is a habitual thief. Right? Gazalna atikahu literally means he's an old thief. In other words, he's always stealing. And therefore, uba'ina di'iknase. You're right. Me'ikar adin, he doesn't have to pay any of the shevach, but rather, what are we levying upon him? Because he is a habitual offender, we're levying upon him a knas. We're imposing upon him an additional penalty payment because he refuses to mend his ways. I will say an incredible, incredible mussar. What's the mussar? Don't get involved in things for which you don't know the whole story. You know, sometimes in life we walk into a situation and say, oh, I got this sized up. I know exactly. Why are you doing this? You need to do this. You need to do this. Be a little bit humble. Take a step back and recognize that even though everything looks so crystal clear to you, there may be many more things that are occurring beneath the surface of which you are not aware. So before a person decides to involve themselves in a particular matzah, a person has to take just a step back to understand the totality of the matzah. Incredible. Mishnah. Let's say we're almost finished. Mishnah. So what happens? A person stole an animal. Actually, we quoted this mishnah on yesterday's daf. Person stole an animal, and the animal got old while in the possession of the thief, or he stole slaves, and they got old. Ultimately, again, he pays back in accordance with their value at the time that he stole the object. I mean, Meir says, when it comes to slaves, thank you. Ultimately, again, you could just return slaves as is. Why, Rabbosai? Because ultimately, again, Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that slaves are like karka. Therefore, karka in an exilis, land cannot be stolen. And therefore, this right. And therefore, again, you give back the servants just as is. Gozlamap, they have nistak. Rabbosai, if you stole a coin, nistak, Rabbosai, means it cracked. Or peros virkivu, or you stole fruit and they rotted, yain vehichmetz, or you stole wine and it soured, mishalim kishas hagezela. So you go ahead and you pay in accordance with the value of the items as they were at the time of the theft. But Bosei, now here is fascinating, Sheba, fascinating. Matbeya v'nifsal, Bosei, listen to this. I stole a coin. Nifsal means what? The coin was taken out of circulation. So most, you know, you had this. You had this also in old times where often currency was linked to the monarch. So for example, when you would have a new king come aboard, what would happen? That king would issue his own currency, which is very nice, except if you were holding a lot of the old currency, you were in big problem. You were in big trouble. Now the good news was what? The good news was that ancient currency was made of precious metals. So therefore, again, it never fully lost its value. But I will say, so listen to this. I stole a coin, and then what happens? A year later, while it's in my possession, it's discontinued. It's nifso, or truma v'nitmes, or I stole truma from a coin, and the truma became truma tzimir, which Rabbi Yossi cannot be consumed by a coin. Or listen to this. Chametz v'avar lava pesach. I'll say, watch this. I steal your 112-year bottle of scotch. And what happens? And Pesach goes by. I'll say, that is now Chomet Sha'ar Alava Pesach. Now, I'll say, in all of these cases, or Behema Benis Abdo Ba'aveira, or I stole your animal, and then there was an Aveira done with the animal, right? Either, I'll say, an act of bestiality, or it was worshipped as Avodah Zarah, or Shnufsal Me'agavim is back, or there was some type of unrecognizable mum that rendered it unfit for sacrificial service. Oh, Shaisa Yotzili Sakel, or Rabbosai, it became liable to a death penalty. Rabbosai, what's the common denominator in all of these cases? We'll expand on all of them more. Common denominator is Hezek She'eno Nikar. It's unrecognizable damage. The status of the item has changed, but yet what? The item itself looks exactly the same. So what's the halacha in all of these cases? Mishnah Rabbosai, this is wild. Haresha Chalafanecha. The guy comes back and says, listen, I'm giving you back. It's exactly that. It's the same bottle of scotch. Of course, again, the owner is crying hot, bitter tears. My wish, like, Khurban Abayas. Right? What do you mean, same scotch? It's not the same scotch, right? Before I was able to drink it, now I can't drink it. But Rabbah said, because the object itself is not in any way different, the ganav could simply return the object to this. We'll qualify that in just a little bit. Says the Gemara, Amar Papa, lo iskina iskina mamish. When we say the animal has aged, it doesn't mean literally aged. Ayala afilu kachasha. Rather, it means even if the animal was weakened, the halacha is you have to pay the value at the time that you stole it. So Gemara says, one second, v'ha anan hiskina tam, but that's not true. The Mishnah says age. The Mishnah says it got old. So the Gemara says, kachasha kigong hiskina delo hader bari. But we're talking about a case of where it got weakened like it aged. Just like it was when the animal is aged. Aging is irreversible. Aging is irreversible. So we're talking about a case where the animal became weakened in an irreversible fashion. Where the animal cannot be nursed back to health. Amali markashisha reid rav chisla ravashi. Hachi kamri mishmeid derab yochanan. This is what it means. It says, "Hachi kamer mished Rabbi Yochanan, afilu ganav tala v'na'as ha'ayil." Even if you stole a lamb and it became a ram, or eagle v'na'as ha'shor, or a calf and it became an ox, na'as shinui biyado ukeno. Ultimately, again, the shinui has occurred in the hands of the ganav, and the ganav acquires it. Tavachu machar. Therefore, if subsequently the ganav goes ahead and slaughters or sells the animal, shalohu taveach, shalohu mocher. Ultimately, again, he is selling or slaughtering his own animal. Amr le, lava mina lecha, lo tachlev gavri. Have I not told you before, don't switch around opinions. Hahu mishmei derebi Eloi itmar. Ultimately, this statement that you just quoted, Rabosai, a statement that you just quoted is a statement ultimately in the name of Rabbi Eloi. So we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up a message from here tomorrow. But Rabosai, again, we're ending off a continuation of the previous sugya. So the Mishnah seems to be giving us more examples, highlighting the same basic principle, that is, that when a ganav steals something, the obligation for repayment is locked in at the value of the item at the time it is stolen. Rabosai, let's just begin a few minutes. I know the hour is late, but let's just begin a few minutes together of Shari Tshuva.